Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is. Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, we have a story about students who are learning how to build small, quick kayaks in the northwestern United States. The students use the same materials boat builders used hundreds of years ago. We will have that story later in the program. But first, the Federal Aviation Administration has written rules to govern the use of commercial drones in the United States. The proposed rules were released at the same time as a presidential order telling federal agencies how they may use such aircraft. President Barack Obama ordered the agencies to be open with Americans and to protect their civil liberties. Jim Tedder has more.
The rules would permit new uses of drone aircraft weighing less than 25 kilograms, often called micro drones. Businesses could use them to perform such jobs as watching over crops or inspecting bridges or electrical towers. The rules would require drone operators to be at least 17 years old and pass a written test to get a special pilot certificate. Operators would be permitted to fly drones only during the day. They would be permitted to fly no higher than 152 meters and no faster than 160 kilometers an hour. In addition, an operator would have to be able to see the unmanned aerial vehicle, or UAV, while they are operating it. UAVs would be banned from flying over people or in the area around airports. News organizations would still be barred from taking pictures using drones. The rules do not permit companies to use drones to carry packages. But as technology changes, the rules could be amended. Some businesses have already announced plans to use drones to transport goods or products. Todd Curtis operates airsafe.com. He says the proposed rules are a good first step.
The technology of drones is advancing at such a rapid rate that even if the FAA tried to its best ability to put out regulations very quickly, it would probably be superseded by the technology. So having some sort of guidance now, even though it's not official, will put some kind of sensibility and some kind of limitations as to what commercial people will plan to do with drones.
Mr. Curtis says the use of drones for some projects will replace pilots because manned aircraft will not be necessary. Michael Huerta heads the Federal Aviation Administration. He says the FAA will use public education campaigns and fines to enforce the new rules after they have been approved. The federal agency is still writing rules for larger drones. That process could take years. Micro drones have become popular in the United States. They are operated by hobbyists, people who fly drones for the love of it. Smaller UAVs, those weighing less than 2 kilograms, have few restrictions. They cannot fly any higher than 122 meters, must stay 8 kilometers away from airports, and must remain in the line of sight of the operator. The FAA rules are designed to balance flight safety with the economic possibilities of drones. But President Obama's memo is aimed at protecting the privacy of American citizens. His order requires federal agencies to guard against the abuse of information collected from their drone flights. It also requires examination of agency policies and openness in making those policies public. And it calls for a partnership between the government and business in creating guidelines for the commercial use of drones. The rules are still months or years away from going into effect. I'm Jim Tedder.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA, Learning English. People have been making boats for thousands of years. Archaeologists have found evidence of boat building by early human beings all over the world. They say early humans used the boats to both hunt and explore. Christopher Cruz has more.
Some of the earliest boats have been found in the Aleutian Islands in the northwestern United States. People who lived there long ago ate sea mammals to survive. They used a small, quick kayak to hunt the animals. Russians would later name the kayak a badarka. This kind of boat is only built in the Aleutian Islands. Corey Friedman works at the Center for Wooden Boats in Seattle, Washington. He teaches students how to build badarkas using methods that are respectful of the culture.
We use very, very little materials, thus our boats are the lightest in the world.
Students make the boats the same way boat builders made them hundreds of years ago, except they do not use animal skins. The boats are built without detailed technical plans or drawings or modern tools, except electric-powered tools.
They're all done, built like sculptures, freehand, so it's more of an art than a science.
A student named Jim has been interested in boating for about 40 years. He puts different pieces together without using nails. He is building his fourth kayak. He says the people of the Aleutian Islands, called Aleuts, used the badarka to hunt sea animals.
The Aleuts would chase down seals and sea lions in this boat. So it's a very, very fast boat. I've heard that there's evidence that when the Russians showed up in the area, they found the natives paddling along at 6, 7, 8, 10 knots chasing seals.
The boats are built in about 9 days. Corey Friedman says the boats may look the same, but they have differences.
And the boats are shaped actually to their personality. Sounds hokey, but if one person's more competitive than another, we're going to have different shaped boats. All those things are taken advantage of.
The students at the Center for Wooden Boats are adults. But Mr. Friedman also teaches boat building to young people in Alaska. They are from 12 to 14 years of age and come from villages throughout the large state.
It's a leadership program, and the boat building that we do is one facet of what they learn there. And at the end of camp, for about 10 days or 2 weeks, they actually go on an expedition using the boats that they built.
Mr. Friedman says he has loved boat building since he was a child, and he loves sharing his passion with children who live in an area where the boats were first made. I'm Christopher Cruz.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. President Barack Obama's executive order on immigration was supposed to go into effect this week. The order would prevent millions of undocumented immigrants in the United States from being sent back to their home country. On Monday, a U.S. federal judge temporarily blocked Mr. Obama's plan. Judge Andrew Hanen ruled in support of 26 states that sought to cancel the order. His ruling came a day before the first part of the program was to begin. The state governments argued Mr. Obama had overreached the limits of his powers as president. They also said the executive order would cause financial harm to the states. Experts say the legal battle is far from over. Up to 5 million undocumented immigrants were excited when President Obama signed the order last year. In immigrant communities, feelings of hope turned to sadness when the judge's ruling was announced. At the White House, the president had this reaction.
We're not going to disregard this federal court ruling, so we're not going to be actually taking applications in until this case is settled.
A final decision on the case will take time. Paul Collins serves as Director of Legal Studies at the University of Massachusetts.
And the law really is not black or white on this one. If it went to the Supreme Court and they ruled on the merits of this case, it probably wouldn't come down for half a year to years.
Until then, undocumented immigrants are unsure of their future. Stephen Rodriguez was brought to the United States from Mexico as a baby. Now, as a young adult, he cannot work legally for a U.S. business.
I would go out looking for a job and nobody would hire me.
The U.S. Congress has been unable to agree on a plan to reform the immigration system. Texas Congressman Lamar Smith is a member of the Republican Party. He says lack of congressional action is no reason for the executive order.
The president said, I'm going to give them work permits, I'm going to allow them to stay, I'm going to allow them to get federal benefits. That's where he went beyond what I think he can do.
Some people have protested the judge's ruling, but state officials who brought the case say they are defending constitutional order. Mark Brnovich is Arizona's Attorney General.
This is an important constitutional principle. This isn't just even about immigration. It's about whether the President of the United States can act unilaterally on any legal issue.
President Obama disagrees.
I think the law is on our side and history is on our side. And we are going to appeal it. And we will be prepared to implement this fully as soon as the legal issues get resolved.
Until this week, history would seem to support Mr. Obama's position. Legal expert Paul Collins says states have had trouble winning cases on immigration issues.
Federal courts have been fairly deferential to the federal government's policies on immigration, particularly when those challenges are being brought by states. So the states have a tough road to hoe.
Idalis Cervantes lives in Arizona. Until Monday, she thought her Mexican-born parents would be protected from expulsion. She says she and her parents were heartbroken when they heard about the judge's decision. Ms. Cervantes says she is not backing off.
I will fight, and I know I have a whole community backing me up that will make sure that my parents stay in this country.
And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter.
Thank you.
Now, the VOA Special English Program, American Stories. Today, we present the short story, Dr. Heidegger's Experiment, by Nathaniel Hawthorne. Here is Barbara Klein with the story.
That very unusual man, old Dr. Heidegger, once invited four friends to meet him in his office. There were three white-bearded gentlemen, Mr. Medbourne, Colonel Killigrew, and Mr. Gascoigne. And there was a thin old lady whose husband had died, so she was called the Widow Wycherly. They were all sad old creatures who had been unfortunate in life. As a young man, Mr. Medbourne had lost all his money in a badly planned business deal. Colonel Killigrew had wasted his best years and health enjoying the pleasures of women and drink. Mr. Gascoigne was a ruined politician with an evil past. As for the Widow Wycherly, tradition tells us that she was once a great beauty, but shocking stories about her past had led the people of the town to reject her, so she lived very much alone. It is worth stating that each of these three men were early lovers of the Widow Wycherly, and they had once been on the point of killing each other over her. "My dear old friends," said Dr. Heidegger, "I would like your help in one of my little experiments." He motioned for them to sit down. Dr. Heidegger's office was a very strange place. The dark room was filled with books, cobwebs, and dust. An old mirror hanging between two bookcases was said to show the ghosts of all the doctor's dead patients. On another wall hung a painting of the young woman Dr. Heidegger was to have married long ago. But she died the night before their wedding after drinking one of the doctor's medicines. The most mysterious object in the room was a large book covered in black leather. It was said to be a book of magic. On the summer afternoon of our story, a black table stood in the middle of the room. On it was a beautiful cut-glass vase. Four glasses were also on the table. Dr. Heidegger was known for his unusual experiments, but his four guests did not expect anything very interesting. The doctor picked up his black leather book of magic. From its pages, he removed a dried-up old rose. "This rose," said the doctor, "was given to me 55 years ago by Sylvia Ward, whose painting hangs on this wall. I was to wear it at our wedding. Would you think it possible that this ancient rose could ever bloom again?" "Nonsense," said the Widow Wycherly with a toss of her head. "You might as well ask if an old woman's lined face could ever bloom again." "See," answered Dr. Heidegger. He reached for the vase and threw the dried rose into the water it contained. Soon a change began to appear. The crushed and dried petals moved and slowly turned from brown to red. And there was the rose of half a century looking as fresh as when Sylvia Ward had first given it to her lover. "That is a very pretty trick," said the doctor's friends. "What is the secret?" "Did you ever hear of the Fountain of Youth?" asked Dr. Heidegger. "The Spanish explorer Ponce de Leon went in search of it centuries ago, but he was not looking in the right place. If I am rightly informed, the famous Fountain of Youth is in southern Florida. A friend of mine has sent me the water you see in the vase." The doctor filled the four glasses with water from the Fountain of Youth. The liquid produced little bubbles that rose up to the silvery surface. The old guests agreed to drink the water, although they did not believe in its power. "Before you drink, my friends," the doctor said, "you should draw up a few general rules as guidance before you pass a second time through the dangers of youth. You have had a lifetime of experience to direct you. Think what a shame it would be if the wisdom of your experiences did not act as a guide and teacher." The doctor's four friends answered him with a laugh. The idea that they would ever repeat the mistakes of their youth was very funny. "Drink, then," said the doctor. "I am happy that I have so well chosen the subjects of my experiment." They raised the glasses to their lips. If the liquid really was magical, it could not have been given to four human beings who needed it more. They seemed as though they had never known youth or pleasure. They looked like they had always been the weak, unhappy creatures who were bent over the doctor's table. They drank the water. There was an almost immediate improvement among the guests. A cheerful glow like sunshine brightened their faces. They looked at one another, imagining that some magic power had really started to smooth the lines on their faces. "Quick, give us more of this wondrous water," they cried. "We are younger, but we are still too old." "Patience," said Dr. Heidegger, who watched the experiment with scientific coolness. "You have been a long time growing old. Surely you could wait half an hour to grow young." Again, he filled their glasses. The four guests drank the liquid in one swallow. As the liquid passed down their throats, it seemed to change their whole systems. Their eyes grew clear and bright. Their hair turned from silver to darker shades. "My dear widow, you are lovely," cried Colonel Killigrew, who watched as the signs of age disappeared from her face. The widow ran to the mirror. The three men started to behave in such a way that proved the magic of the Fountain of Youth's water. Mr. Gascoigne's mind turned to political topics. He talked about nationalism and the rights of the people. He also told secrets softly to himself. All this time, Colonel Killigrew had been shouting out happy drinking songs while his eyes turned towards the curvy body of the widow Wycherly. Mr. Medbourne was adding dollars and cents to pay for a proposed project. It would supply the East Indies with ice by linking a team of whales to the polar icebergs. As for the widow Wycherly, she stood in front of the mirror, greeting her image as a friend she loved better than anything in the world. "My dear old doctor," she cried, "please give me another glass." The doctor had already filled the glasses again. It was now near sunset, and the room was darker than ever. But a moon-like light shined from within the vase. The doctor sat in his chair, watching. As the four guests drank their third glass of water, they were silenced by the expression on the doctor's mysterious face. The next moment, the exciting rush of young life shot through their blood. They were now at the happy height of youth. The endless cares, sadness, and diseases of age were remembered only as a troubled dream from which they had awoken. "We are young," they cried. The guests were a group of happy youngsters, almost crazy with energy. They laughed at the old-fashioned clothing they wore. They shouted happily and jumped around the room. The widow Wycherly, if such a young lady could be called a widow, ran to the doctor's chair and asked him to dance. "Please excuse me," answered the doctor quietly. "My dancing days were over long ago, but these three young men would be happy to have such a lovely partner." The men began to argue violently about who would dance with her. They gathered around the widow, each grabbing for her. Yet by a strange trick, owing to the darkness of the room, the tall mirror is said to have reflected the forms of three old gray men competing for a faded old woman. As the three fought for the woman's favor, they reached violently for each other's throats. In their struggle, they turned over the table. The vase broke into 1,000 pieces. The water of youth flowed in a bright stream across the floor. The guests stood still. A strange coldness was slowly stealing over them all. They looked at Dr. Heidegger, who was holding his treasured rose. The flower was fading and drying up once more. The guests looked at each other and saw their looks changing back. "Are we grown old again so soon?" they cried. In truth, they had. The water of youth had powers that were only temporary. "Yes, friends, you are old again," the doctor said, "and the water of youth lies wasted on the ground. But even if it flowed in a river at my door, I still would not drink it. This is the lesson you have taught me." But the doctor's four friends had learned no such lesson. They decided at that moment to travel to Florida and drink morning, noon, and night from the fountain of youth.
You have heard the American story, Dr. Heidegger's Experiment, by Nathaniel Hawthorne. Your storyteller was Barbara Klein. I'm Mario Ritter. Listen again next week for another American Story in VOA Special English.